when you were going back to the campaign in 2003 leading up to Iraq, that was very much a concerted campaign. Because, I mean, I was very well knowledgeable of how PR campaigns work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had studied some psychology and stuff like that at that point, too. And it was remarkable. The mushroom cloud in the sky, they all went out on the Sunday programs. In those days of Bush and delay, they were so incredibly on point message-wise. They had a message to get out. And it didn't matter if the broadcaster asked them what the price of tea in China was. They might say, well, I'm not sure what the price of tea in China is, but what I do know, and then they would go into what they wanted to say. And it was remarkable that, you know, the mushroom cloud in the sky, that was tested hard, you know, like that was no accident. They came up with that imagery. They all went out on the news stations and did that. They were using expressions and I didn't understand what they were doing. But when I saw them doing the same thing over and over again, I knew it wasn't accidental. So I started really kind of like, what is going on here? And what they would do is they would say, when they're being interviewed, they would say things like, well, what I do know about Saddam Hussein, like Osama bin Laden. And they would always tie together references of Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden or Saddam Hussein and 9/11 as closely as they could in their answers. And that creates the connection in people's minds, because after 9/11, people didn't think Iraq had anything to do with it. But by the time they got us into Iraq, they did. And so they created those connections without necessarily saying they're connected. You could say, I don't necessarily know that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11, but I do know that Saddam Hussein, like Osama bin Laden, is a very bad person. So anyway, so there was that, and there was also, I was going through some research, and when Colin Powell testified before the UN, and I was aware they were doing this, or I was suspecting they were doing this, but they were using those security alerts, and increasing security alerts, because what that, it did two things. First, it took the news off of whatever was going on, so they controlled the message, and it also always increased Bush's approval rating. So they might have done it like before they did the Patriot Act, to make people concerned. So it took any concerns of the Patriot Act off of the news, as well as it also increased Bush's approval rating all before the election to try to provide that little arm twisting to get it approved. I think they might have done it then. But I went back and I checked, and they did do it when Colin Powell testified before the UN. Remember, he provided that evidence. And I remembered hearing about some of this was like from something from the 80s pulled off the internet and people were starting to debunk it. And then all of a sudden it disappeared. And so I got to thinking, I wonder what happened. And sure enough, they increased the security alert, one of those security alerts, and they elevated the risk. And it took the news all off of Colin Powell's testimony getting debunked and switched it to something else. They finally got caught when they did it at the Democratic National Convention in 2004. And they did it the day of Kerry's acceptance speech. And some media started to question it, like the time before they did it, which I think was earlier in July. They were kind of thinking, now, wait a second. And they started kind of catching on, asking more questions. So the administration should have probably been a little smarter, but they weren't. So what they did is they did it when Kerry was doing his acceptance speech, like that day or something, to kind of, I think, try to deflect the coverage. But the media went back and said, what was this based on? And they were persistent and persistent. Like, why did this have to happen on this day? Like, what was the immediate threat that made this security alert happen on this day and pushed and pushed and pushed? And it turns out it was basically based on nothing. I think eventually they pointed to something they knew like 2 weeks earlier. You know, there it had nothing to really do with anything. And you'll notice after that, they stopped using it. We don't have those alerts anymore. Remember, it's security alerts going up to yellow, security alert, you know, like going up to orange. We don't really have that anymore because it was just became a useful tool. So anyway, so when you mentioned that, I thought I would just toss that in, because if you're digging through that stuff, one of the guys wrote, and you might have been referring to this, was, I forget which guy wrote it out of the Bush administration, but basically he made the comment like he referred to a campaign. And they started the campaign for Iraq, I think, after Labor Day, because everybody knows you don't start a campaign you know, like in the summer. He made some comment like that. You know, everybody knows if you're going to start a campaign, you do it here. And they did. They had a little campaign to ramp us into war. So, which kind of goes back to the book that I pointed out. Every war starts in the mines before it starts with forced bomb is dropped or bullet is fired. It starts in the mine. And that's just another example of it starting in the mines because, you know, if they had tried anything in August or September, people would have been like, what the heck? Why Iraq? What's going on? Right. But by the time they kind of got done with things, they kind of at least gotten people into a confused enough state to where they weren't maybe going to necessarily fight it so hard, or they might even support it. It's like a basic campaign to do it. It's
scary.
For me, it was scary and interesting because I could see the PR techniques at work. Yeah, I could see everything at work. And I was skeptical a lot of like how effective was this really, particularly after 9/11. I had just started reading the psychology stuff. You know, I'm like a math person. Applied math was my major. So I stayed out of the English stuff and did all the chemistry and all that stuff to avoid it. So that was my thinking. So I was like, okay, I could see where this might influence people, but I really was kind of skeptical too, to some extent. Then I started to see it happening after 9/11, completely happening like they said, and how, you know, people defer to authority when they're scared and all of these things, how these message points would work. And I would think, you've got to be kidding. This can't be working. And then I would see public opinion polls and things like that and see where, you know, public opinion had shifted dramatically. You know, it was stunning. I don't think I could have had like a more concrete validation of things I was somewhat skeptical to and understanding the magnitude. You know, this is on a massive scale and the magnitude of how much this stuff can happen. And then the run up to Iraq was the same thing. I did, like I said, I didn't understand why they would keep saying Osama bin Laden, you know, like Saddam Hussein or vice versa. But that's what they were doing, is making that connection. And then flash forward, though, this is what's interesting, too. Flash forward when Obama was president and he said he didn't want people using the words Islamic terrorists. And people had a fit about why didn't he want people to refer to terrorists as Islamic terrorists. It was for the same reason. If you're not using the word Islam a lot, and our culture doesn't, by referring to Islamic terrorists, it puts those two things together. You know, subconsciously, people put them together. You hear Islam and they think terrorists. I think it was a little too late for Obama to do that, but he still tried to do it. And that was the reason. It was the same. It was to not do what the Bush administration purposely did back in 2003 to create a false connection. He was trying to stop a false connection. But the media went on one side of the fence, went nuts. And I don't think they really explained. They never explained why, but that's why he wanted those two connected. You know, there was a reason for it.
And it was legitimate. And that's what I think Christian nationalism does, because it puts those two words together and it just demonizes Christians, because you can identify, you can say that nationalists use or misuse Christianity. But I think when you start equating the two, you're creating, and then you've already got people on the left who are predisposed to not like Christianity or blame Christianity for everything that is wrong in the world and think it needs to be eliminated. So that's why it's very dangerous, because Trump's gonna, and it's like coordinated propaganda. It's coming in at the same time. Now we'll see if it's going to get out there, but what I'm trying to do is preempt it. What you said reminds me of Nancy Pelosi on impeachment, how one day the Democratic Party is not for impeachment, and then the moment Nancy Pelosi comes out, boom, the whole party's on her side. That's right. Tremendous power for one individual. Don't know how that works.
Yeah, and I think they all fell behind. Just one point with Christian nationalism, because I definitely understand your concern with putting those two things together, because there's a reason. There might be another way of looking at it, though, and it could be looking at it as another form of Christianity. in the context of, you know, you've got Catholics, you have Christians over here, and then you have Christian nationalists. Depending on how this expression is used and the context, it actually might be a way of pulling out the people who are combining the two. You know, like this whole, we're a Christian nation, we were born a Christian nation, the Bible comes before the Constitution, before all that. If that's who they're talking about, it might be actually an expression and a way to identify them as being something other than Christian in other senses. Does that make sense?
My main concern is the timing factor. That's why it comes down at this time, because it's not like it's some new big thing and they've been talking about it for a while. But I wonder, maybe it does and people are identifying something like that, but I'm really wondering if it even can have that type of impact. Definitely not in a soundbite, because you have to press them when they say that. You have to press them, oh, not all Christians are like this. But that's kind of a generalization. A minority of Christians are like this. Well, is that really what they're saying? You know, because we had the Ku Klux Klan, right, use Christianity, but people didn't really say Christian Klan, the Christian Ku Klux Klan. So even though they would use that. So I'm concerned about it in that sense.
Yeah, I definitely understand your concern, and particularly the context, who's using it and the context. But I almost feel like to some extent Christianity needs to reclaim themselves. Christianity kind of needs to be able to find a way to reclaim their religion, because right. The religious right has claimed it for so long. Yeah, and that's why I was so supportive when I heard what you were doing. I'm not super religious or anything like that, but I was like, what you're doing is so important, because these other narratives have, you know, these other ways of looking at things have to get out. People have to understand that this other way is not the only way of looking at Christianity. That's why it was so important. So yeah, I haven't heard Christian nationalism as much like you have, because I think you've gotten into different circles than I have.
Right.
But so your concerns may be well understood in those contexts. I definitely get that, because context means a lot and how it's being used. I think that based on if I saw it in the circles that I kind of stay in touch with, I would kind of consider it more like as I explained it. Like Christian nationalism is a way of saying they're putting together this whole God and country, you know, this whole thing that people are kind of sick of, and then giving Christianity a chance to be Christianity on its own.
Right,
does that
right.
make sense? You know, like outside of that.
Right.
And it gives a chance for other people to be able to have that space. Whereas if you take away the nationalism and then you blur it all together, we talk about evangelicals, but even then, like Black evangelicals don't have
the same views. Yeah.
Don't have the same view. But again, like anything, it can be twisted into something.
Right.
You know, there can be more baggage to it. And again, you understand the context in which it's being tossed around. You know, I just look at any way for Christianity in general to be able to pull itself out of that, you know, umbrella, or even the cloud to some extent that these other people created.
Right.
They're still working hard. I mean, how can you support Trump
and be a Christian at the same time? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, except to be a Christian at the same time. Now, maybe you can support Trump in spite of your Christianity.
Right.
And say, you know, I'm a Christian, but yeah, I still support Trump because of other things, right?
Right.
But they're doing it in the context of being consistent with somehow their religious beliefs.
Right.
It's where
they think.
So they think.
Yeah.
And that's where things get really messed up. And they're so out there that, and he just embraces them and uses them. So, I mean, Pat Robertson is amazing. I tape his shows and look for what he's saying politically.
Propaganda, huh?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. He'll sometimes speak up against Trump if he's doing something he doesn't like, but it's still like Obama. When Obama was president, I didn't listen to him too much before Obama. I caught him when Trump first became president, and he hadn't quite changed his narratives. So he was talking about how the Obama was going to destroy the country, and how liberals are destroying the country, and Obama, and we couldn't have four more years of it, and how basically he thought Trump was brought from God, or God gave us another chance with Trump. And this was in March of 2017, right after he got inaugurated. Now you hear him talking about when people are fighting against Trump or arguing or discussing things with Trump. He's like, we need to work together. This is ridiculous. We need unity behind our leader and everything else. And I'm thinking, this isn't the same guy who I just happened to catch in March of 2017. How did we go from one to the other? And he will still bash Democrats as being socialists and evil and trying to destroy the country. You know, his believers, his followers, Robertson's, might have to do what they might be the last chance at this country for this country to be saved. But I mean, it's craziness, but he's on like local channels. He's got a huge following, his own network. I mean, it's crazy, but you know, it's not somebody who's just sitting there in a big closet typing away and doing stuff like that. He has a lot of power and influence. And frankly, their messages are more connected and tied together than what the Democrats can do until.
Yeah, true.
So it's kind of like, even if to some extent he has a smaller, even a slightly smaller megaphone, it's more concise, it's more compact, it can make a bigger difference than people who are just all over the place. So that's the challenge.
And that sort of makes me think about, why are these people in power? Why do we have such evil people in power? How do they get in power? And then is it people think, oh, I'm a good person, I'm going to eschew power, I don't need power. But no, it's the good people who need to take power, and we need to get rid of the bad people out of power. So I guess it's another question for another podcast, but
governorship and the challenges and stuff, and to some extent our political system and how what people have to do to get elected, does that filter out people who could do the job better? I would just back up, because even that has a lot to do with media. The media is really at the base of a lot of this. Things that we don't necessarily attribute to media, if you take it one step back and go, well, what's causing that? It's media. It's just that one last step. So you might not see that media is having a huge influence on it. You know, like people are blaming the senators and how horrible they are and what they did. Well, to some extent, yeah, they're afraid of Trump. Yes, that's true. But Trump's weapon is media. And it's that media, what that media can do, that they're afraid of. And then we should be looking at, why can that media do that? What's going on with that? How is this influence happening? We have freedom of speech, so we have to be careful. But there needs to be also looking at that. I mean, Germany learned the hard way. And now they have some laws against doing certain things. Media and narratives can become dangerous. And we just kind of have ignored that, like, oh, nothing like that can happen here. We have freedom of speech. Nothing can happen there. And so sometimes people have to have, sometimes you don't have pollution laws until you have a big problem. And then you go, oh, now we need pollution laws to fix this and make sure it doesn't happen again. I was looking at a video out Fox, but from 2004, because sometimes it's interesting to take a look at things like that. And at that point, Rupert Murdoch had media that was globally could touch 75% of the world globally. That's how big his network was in 2004. Now we look at looking at Fox narratives, and I've been watching this for a long time. Fox's narratives have enabled a lot of this. You know, like this white nationalism, Trump's a symptom. He's not the cause. But a lot of this goes back and stems from narratives. Some of them looked benign, but they actually led to other types of thinking that could become less than benign. When we look at this, like, rise in right-wing radicalism or nationalism globally, he has networks and influences in all these other countries. To think that perhaps there's not at least one source or one point of influence, that has fed some of what's already always there, I think we may be missing a larger point. I'm not sure yet, because he's all over the world, you know, and there's this like mysterious rise in right-wing nationalism, you know, and people are like, oh yes, it's happening everywhere. Well, he is everywhere too. His networks are everywhere. His ideology spread all over. Granted, that stuff always exists at some level, but if you don't fertilize it and water it, it doesn't necessarily go anywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty so crazy.
I think that, and again, those were 2004 numbers. I can only imagine what they are now. But yeah, like this whole hazy, mysterious rise of right-wing nationalism, I'm thinking, man, I wish I knew more about what his network was and what's going on there and what connections he has, because I don't think this fuzzy rise may be accidental.
Right. Yeah, I bet you're right about that, too. And the Supreme Court has contributed to that. You know, we haven't learned in this, you know, with Citizens United allowing all this money to come in, and a lot of it dark money. I mean, it's amazing how restricted individuals are when they're giving. But these super PACs, how they can give so much money without really identifying who they are.
Right.
And then there was a fairness doctrine. You probably remember that. And I think there were other Supreme Court cases that led to this. So it's been a progression of the Supreme Court's failure due perhaps to ideology, because of an absolutist sense of the First Amendment that we can't block anything. And then we have to give that right to corporations. So the Supreme Court has failed us. And then even in this impeachment trial, this idea that John Roberts has nothing to do but read people's questions, you know, I don't think that's the case. He did one thing and said that we need to respect the Senate's history of being a more stately and more reasonable body, not one that's so exaggerated. He did that one, and that helped. But when it came to just sitting there and watching the Republicans push not only Russian propaganda, but legal falsehood, things that are not true legally, that if you were in a judge's courtroom and you were arguing that, that judge would be breathing down your neck about it. So I think that's a failure. Our system failed, but it didn't work when Andrew Johnson was being charged. Hopefully it will turn out that the backlash will end and reasonable people will take over.
I think as long as media, when you look at those arguments, here's the thing too. Democrats think that the truth is everything. So you lay out these great arguments, which they did. They laid out all these arguments and all the evidence and laid it all out over those days, which they needed to do. What they also needed to do was what the right had. The right had a whole campaign of just distraction, but also, you know, pulling other stuff out and doing things. And what the left needed to have was the bullet points, simple videos that could be distributed to news stations that could concisely deliver their message in 30 seconds or a minute or something, to deliver elements of their message. Short, sweet expressions, things that can be memorable, things like that. And they needed to have something like that going too through this impeachment thing. And they just didn't. So that's the failure part, because the media can cover it, but they can't cover 8 hours, 10 hours of testimony. So anyway, so that's like an example, though, of like Dershowitz and those guys. They gave their media thing. They probably had expressions in there just even highlighted in their scripts to cut for news. And something sounded a little wordy, or the thing was a little chunky going into it or whatever. And it's like, there's their clip, right? And the left, again, outstanding presentation. They did better with the presentation than I thought they would, but it was an outstanding presentation. But the news can't digest that all for them the way they want, consistently like they would want. And the news, they could give it to the news, and the news doesn't necessarily have to use it too. There's always that too.
I want to go and speak about propaganda to make sure everybody's aware of it so that we to head off propaganda, because this is it's a big issue, and I think people should be aware of what they're doing, and we need to be thinking more critically and examining our news, because if we can learn to do that, we might be able to protect ourselves. And if that can get out to people on the right to think critically as well about what they're hearing, that might go a long way to helping this country get back together and ending some of the division and some of the right-wing propaganda and policies that come out of it as a result.
Well, I was waiting for the left to follow. The right mastered the techniques and the left would usually follow. And for the most part, like Obama, during the Obama years, I'm not sure if you were on paying that much attention, but I was paying a lot of attention from about 2012.
Yeah, I was paying attention, but maybe not to the same things you were.
Yeah, and I came from a conservative area, so a lot of the people I connected with were ex-classmates right away and stuff like that, so it was rolling pretty fast. But anyway, there were so many lies, complete lies told about Obama. I mean, based on nothing. And I would just push back and say, you know, that's not true, or here's the truth. And I thought that might help him, but it was kind of my whole evolution of understanding this, too, has helped, because then they stopped caring about that. And I would just tell them two things, because when they would push out stuff that wasn't true, two things would usually happen. People would say, yeah, that's, you know, that guy, he sucks, you know, that kind of thing. And then other people, and then they would think that it's true. And I would just point out that, first of all, you're making your friends look stupid because it's not true and they believe it. And second of all, if Obama was really that bad, you shouldn't have to make anything up. There should be plenty out there for you to use, and you shouldn't have to make anything up. So this just doesn't look good all the way around. I didn't say look good, but, you know, if he was that bad, you're kind of showing he's not that bad because you're having to make stuff up. So the funny thing is with Trump, which isn't really that funny, I was waiting for the left to kind of follow in those footsteps. And for the most part, they haven't. Most of what I see, there may be the illogical things like you are talking about, but as far as making up things Trump has said or done specifically, there hasn't been that much, because what he does is so crazy. So when I catch it, I just point out the same thing. And satire is a bad thing in this environment. So I really saw the destruction. Satire is funny. Funny stuff goes viral and travels faster, but satire usually has an element of truth, or it seems like it could be true. You know, there's a truthiness in there, but it's not true. And it gets passed around enough, eventually it becomes like a fact because it's been tossed around. People forget it's satire. I really saw by the end of the Obama administration and when Trump was running, there was people I knew, a couple people who literally were so lost, they didn't know what was real and what wasn't. Because they had seen so much garbage pass through. The satire, they thought might have been satire the first couple times, then they thought it was true. And we don't have a way of, it's like there's not a storage compartment in our brain that says, oh, this was satire, I'm going to set it over here, or I'm going to forget it. It kind of sits there along with the stuff that is true. And it all starts getting mixed together when we're bombarded with so much stuff. And I mean, I felt really badly, really, really badly, because, like I said, there's people that were, they literally didn't know what was true. They couldn't tell what was real and what wasn't when it came to things. And I could just honestly see they were struggling with it. And it was all from social media and stuff. And a lot of it was satire layered on satire, you know, like those narratives build, creates narratives that build. That was what the right used a lot during Obama's years. So I kind of pushed back on satire right away and just say, look, I was skeptical when I first saw it under Obama. But then to see what happens over time and repetition, I really pushed back hard. And I just say, this is what I saw. And so it's not nothing. It is something, and it can have really bad consequences. I guess if we all just do our part and make people aware.
Confront the propaganda when you see it, if you can, and sort of counter propaganda, which is kind of what we're doing in some sense, although that's still propaganda, but if we're trying to correct misinformation, it may not be a bad form of propaganda, I guess.
I think the difference is it might be with intention. So in that sense, it's propaganda. So like examples I gave with Biden and what he could say, this is about Trump and turn it back on Trump. I don't know why would I answer a subpoena? Why would they talk to me? This is about Trump, right? You could call that propaganda in a sense because it's with a purpose. But on the other hand, this is kind of about Trump.
Right? The election is about Trump, that's for sure.
Yeah, or what he did with Ukraine.
Yes.
You know, like Ukraine. It's really about what Trump did in an effort to try to hang Biden out to dry so that it could help him during the election campaign. Because if Biden did something wrong, he could have handled it completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have asked for an announcement. He wanted an announcement more than anything of an investigation.
That's right. Right. Trump wanted an announcement of the investigation.
And he wasn't asking about details of an investigation. He didn't ask about who's going to be handling it. There was none of that that would make you think, oh, he was really interested in an investigation. Just the announcement, so that he could use the announcement. And he wanted the announcement by the president, not somebody lower. He wanted it by the head guy. It's propaganda in the context of there's a purpose is known, but on the other hand, it's not really misleading. Do you know what I mean? Why would Biden testify? Because this is about trying to use the presidential office. Even if Biden, it's like the police. The police can't go into your house if they think you're guilty and do whatever they want. You know, there's still limits as far as how this happens and ways in which this has to happen that protects all of us. Because otherwise Trump can go do this over here, and he could do this over here, and he could do this over here. So there's kind of a process in protections.
As far as the Constitution goes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we're not really in a democracy if the president can do whatever he wants. And think about it, 70% of Americans, maybe 75% of Americans, wanted witnesses and testimony.
Right.
And we didn't get it.
Right.
So there's really no concern for the will of the people on the part of the Republicans, at least. And this is not something new, that the majority of Americans want something and it doesn't happen. And the minority, but businesses and the rich get their way all the time. And that's a feature of our system.
There was a 2014 Princeton study that basically said we were an oligarchy, in that when they compared the policy preferences of what people wanted versus basically the wealthy, Congress went with, and policies that were implemented that were those that the wealthy wanted, not the people. So that goes back to 2014 Princeton study. So you're definitely right with that. And that's not good. I guess my concern is, I've said this and I've heard other people ask the GOP about this, and, you know, like, well, what will you do if there's a Democratic president? And they seem to like have no emotion to that answer. When you look at ID laws, you know, changing voter purges, when you look at changing the voting places, voting hours, and doing all these things to disenfranchise people, North Carolina's got caught on it hard. You go through all these things. Then you go through that McConnell held back money to help states make their voting system stronger so that they wouldn't get hacked and damaged. And he held that money back. I don't know. I think he passed some, but I don't know if he's still holding some back. But he just passed it probably a year out, which basically means that by the time the states apply to get funding, there's not going to be much they can do. They're going to be in the middle of the primaries and everything else. Oh, there you go. So then when I see people being asked, and I've asked people myself, so what will you do if there's a Democratic president? And you look at their answer, and I'm thinking to myself, it's almost like they have no intention of ever having a Democratic president. If you watch, you know what I mean? I'm thinking, I hope we're not looking like a year from now going, you know, when we asked those questions and they had that answer, they pretty much knew they were going to do this all along. We'll see. Oh my gosh. They've lost patience. They're taking action. But so we'll see. Hopefully that's not the case. But in the context of everything else, I kind of wonder. Oh my God. How old are they?
Around 2 or 3 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got 4. I adopted 2 outdoor and I had these 2. These are my first cats.
Oh, your first?
Yeah. I've been a dog person before, but this is my first cat.
Your first cat.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah. I'm a dog person too, but I don't have a yard or anything, so I'll probably get a cat if I get anything.
They poop in a box.
Yeah, I know. Independent. Hopefully they'd be independent and
they clean themselves.
They clean themselves, yeah. But dogs are fun too. But yeah, because dogs you can take hiking.
Yeah, you know? That's the one thing I like about a dog. You can go on a walk with a dog. You can't really go on a walk with a cat.
Not really.
Yeah.
Well, like I could go on vacation, go up north and take the dog with me, you know, and that's cool. But cats will be like, I'm just going to come home to some really pissed off cats for leaving them at home and not being around. So,
yeah. Well, if you have at least 2 of them, then that helps.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I got a buddy cat. That's why I got him a buddy, his brother.
Yeah. So. I've seen people with that friend has just got 2 kittens and I can definitely see the advantage. I think we're only supposed to have 1 pet here. Yeah. But I think people have more than 1 cat. Yeah. And I think to your point, having 2 cats
is the key
to success a little bit.
It might be more humane for them and they don't get pissed off.
Yeah, they don't take it out on you. It just probably creates a better.
Yeah. Sometimes they seem like they're worried. If I'm gone for a week, I have somebody take care of them. And then where is he? And they get all. One of them does. This one does. So, all right, Lisa. Thanks. Thanks.
Well, you're welcome. And thank your cats for their patience.
Yes, I will.
Because I think we used it up and then some, but they still did pretty good with it. And, very good. I think this was a good topic to cover and timely.
Yeah, I think it really needs to be covered, too, at this time, too. Yeah. So.
Thanks again for all your good work. It's needed.
Thank you, Lisa. Keep up the good work yourself.
Thank you. Okay. Take care, Rich.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.